Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve Jones Show on a Monday. Great to have you with us. Talk briefly about the NBA, then we'll get to Geno Lewis from Saturday and hear from him and his thoughts taking over as what is perceived to be the number one receiver spot on this team for Allen Robinson, who was now with the Jacksonville Jaguars after being a second-round pick. And today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. The Purdys have been taking great care of everyone in the Valley here for decades. And not only that, they've been giving back to the Valley for decades. Dependable, have your needs. They always come first. Your needs always come first to them. That's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. Talk about serving the Valley for decades. How about 99 years? Sunbury Motors. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio today. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We're here at the Chateau today. Quickly in the NBA, a little follow-up. Asked on Friday where I thought pieces would fall. Didn't do well in terms of telling you where pieces would fall. Said Carmelo Anthony would re-sign with the Knicks. He did. Luol Deng, I said, would not re-sign with Cleveland. That was true. He ended up signing with Miami. But I said that that Chris Bosh would go to Houston and that Houston would match the contract of Chandler Parsons. Neither one happened. Chris Bosh ended up re-signing with Miami for the max. And Chandler Parsons, Houston decided to let him go to Dallas. So that was a big change. And, of course, the other part, too, was Pau Gasol going to the Chicago Bulls. So that's how it fell in free agency in the NBA. All the dominoes are now in place, and the NBA can go to the back burner, which means we can concentrate on Phillies baseball. Okay, we'll take a different route then. We don't want to go that route. Let's go back to Penn State football now. Geno Lewis. Allen Robinson, the last two seasons, has been the top wide receiver in the Big Ten. And Allen Robinson was rewarded by being a second-round draft pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars, electing not to come back for his senior season. In the Wisconsin game, we saw Geno Lewis step up with a big performance, including a pair of touchdowns. And now he's looked at, along with Matt Zandelato, they're the veterans in this group. After that, it's the kiddie core, all right, for Penn State. And he talked about stepping up as the number one receiver.
So sometimes the guy that has to come up next, he might not know as much as the guy that if he gets hurt or something. But at the end of the day, it's the next man up, and we're confident in the guy that's behind the one that's playing. So we'll be all right.
You're taking over the number one receiver spot from maybe the best receiver this program has ever had.
Right.
How much do you look forward and embrace that challenge, but maybe also compared to know that those are huge shoes to fill?
Yeah, absolutely. I learned a lot from Allen, man. He's a great dude. When I got here, he put me under his wing, I'm excited for this season. I'm happy and humbled to be put in the position that I'm in right now. And, I'm ready to just go out here this season and have a great year.
You've been such an excellent route runner.
Right.
Where are you? What's the strength of your game?
I definitely go up and get the ball. I have great hands, my route running is getting really good, I'm confident in it right now. And, it's just going to keep getting better. So I'm just really excited.
You've been a quarterback in high school. Now into your third year of this, when did it start to become comfortable for you to play this role?
Probably at the end of last year. The Wisconsin game, it went really well for me. And, after games like that, it definitely builds your confidence up, So I'm really excited now and, to see what happens this year.
Have you seen a difference in Christian because now second year and the learning curve is different?
Yeah, absolutely. His confidence has went up. Now he has a year under his belt, so he knows what to expect, in the games and things like that. So I'm just real excited for him this year.
How specifically can the 7-on-7s help you guys when you get into preseason camp?
It just shows you how much the plays and the DBs, just working together with them and things like that. So 7-on-7 helps a lot, but we're just all excited for the season.
Which of the DBs have been playing well this summer?
Jordan Lucas is doing really well. Trevor Williams, you know, things like that. I think they're going to have great seasons, and, you know, I'm just really excited for them, too. Yeah, no problem.
Is Akeel Lynch doing anything at all right now?
Yeah, you know.
Anything?
He's our. Sometimes he can be a little lazy, you know what I'm saying? But he comes out here.
Gino's just mad because I beat him on the hills a couple times.
No, that's false. He's mad because I'm faster than him.
Any day is my day, so, you know.
And I beat him on the sled pushes and things
we're
like
good
that.
Friends, you know, we compete every day, though, but it's real fun.
Yeah.
Sure.
Gino Lewis, Akeel Lynch, and I having a little bit of fun there at the end. As Lift for Life was successful, we'll get some final numbers for you on that coming up tomorrow. Let's take a different tack now to Penn State football. We've talked now with Dwight Gault, the strength and conditioning coach. That was our lead off. And then in the previous half hour, heard from Christian Hackenberg, Mike Hull, Jesse James, Sam Ficken, Miles Diefenbach, and Adam Brenneman. We just heard from Gino Lewis. So that's the current football team. And by the way, you can go to Steve Jones Show and check out the podcast if you want to hear any of those interviews again. The Dwight Gault one, I think, is must listen for Penn State football fans. Just an opinion. But let's get to the future of Penn State football. Bring in Tim Owen, a Blue White Illustrated on the recruiting front. Tim, how good was the month of June for Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Between all the camps, they got a couple commitments out of the month. Had a lot of great prospects come up on campus for camp, whether they were in the 2016 class or in the 15 class. Even some really top-notch 2017 prospects were on campus throughout the month of June. So, yeah, all around, real solid month. I mean, they finished it off with the most recent commitment of Manny Bowen, linebacker down in New Jersey from the beach down in South Jersey. Real good prospect, real athletic guy. And then they also got Miles Hartsfield to commit at a camp. I think it was actually the first camp session of June. He's a D-back from New Jersey as well. Real athletic. You know, super fast. Projects as a kick returner, punt returner, you know, first at his Penn State career. And he'll probably play some corner, you know, later on once he develops a little bit. But, yeah, all in all, a great month. They had great prospect on campus. The most recent camp, I think June 22nd, was just loaded with talent. I've only been covering the recruiting scene for about 3 or 4 years, Steve, but that June 22nd camp, I've never seen so much talent at a Penn State camp. So it's almost like I was at one of the all-star camps, you know, that Rivals holds. You had lots of 2016 talent, 2017 talent. All the 2015 commits were on hand. So, yeah, there's a lot of momentum going right now. I mean, it kind of is done now because of the dead period as you're aware of, but yeah, the month of June is pretty solid, I'd have to say.
So where are they right now on, let's take it one step further. I think a lot of people have a pretty good handle on where they are on February 15. Where are they and what kind of groundwork have they laid now on 16 and 17, in your opinion?
One of the benefits to have 17 class of 2015 verbal commitments right now is a lot of the focus goes to those next two classes. I mean, more so the next class, 2016. But it allows a lot of time to start building these relationships early, which, as you know, that's all it is in recruiting, you know, relationships and building that foundation early. And the class of 2016, especially in the Mid-Atlantic region next year, is pretty stacked with good talent, you know, from the quarterbacks, offensive line, some real good defensive ends in the 2016 class. So they're starting to get the groundwork laid, you know, get to know these kids. They're not recruiting them real heavy at this point. You know, they're just kind of like almost making friendships, trying to, you know, reaching out, saying, hey, getting to know these guys a little bit better, letting these recruits, getting to know the coaches and the staff and the assistants a little bit better. So it's just kind of all about kind of easing your way in, you know, kind of making these recruits feel at home now when they are on campus. And then when it comes time to really make the push next in the fall, next spring, you know, it's not like they're going to be coming on too strong because they have a good solid base with a lot of these guys. Like I said, there's a lot of great talent, and that's kind of one of the benefits of you know, recruiting so well early for this 2015 class is you're just starting in on the next class. And kind of what we do at BWI, too. I mean, there's not a whole lot of news to be reporting right now on the 2015 class because there's 17 commitments already. You know, they probably only take 23-ish total commitments in the class of 2015. So, you know, we're starting to focus on the 2016 class as well, trying to put our feelers out, see who Penn State's targets, see who, has a verbal scholarship offer this early in the stage. We are switching gears a little bit, but, the main focus still is on the class of 2015 for a few more months. And what Penn State's finding out right now, too, is getting these early commitments in the 2015 class. They also kind of have to keep recruiting these kids, even though they're committed. Do some of these guys want to go take some other visits, check out some other schools, maybe take a visit with a teammate or two. So even though they're committed, Franklin and the guys, they still have to kind of keep that relationship going. And they do. You hear James Franklin talk about that all the time. The recruiting period doesn't really ever end until they sign that letter of intent in February. So, it's a mixture of the two things right now, to keeping those 2015 commitments secure and then, looking ahead to the 2016-17 class where there's a lot of talent to be recruited. And we'll be getting to know those names quite a bit here over the next year or two.
We talked about how valuable the elite camp was for basketball earlier this week. We know Penn State has reaped incredible fruit out of its camps over the years. They were one of the first ones to do it. How important now is the James Franklin style of camp and how his assistants work it and the value to it?
Well, here's all the recruits. They always talk about the energy of the staff. They're all so close. They've all come up together from Vanderbilt, most of them at least, most of the coaches. And so they just have this real strong rapport built up among each other. And the recruits really see that. They feed off of it. And, when they go to these camps, they get to be coached by them a little bit, see how they work. And that energy is what, most of these kids talk about. But what's kind of funny is when they do get these top recruits on campus, especially the younger guys in the 2016 class, if they're the premier guys who've already gotten a bunch of scholarship offers, they'll be invited up to camp. But the coaches are like, hey, don't worry about camping. Let's just hang out, sit on the sidelines, see how we run things, check out our facility, check out the weight room, the locker room. Just kind of take it easy. Because some of these top prospects, they've seen all they've needed to see already. They don't need to be doing any more scouting or anything as far as that goes. So they get these top prospects on campus, and they just kind of let them sit back and relax a little bit and just kind of see how things are done. Kind of like a first-hand perspective. But it's kind of cool. You get some prospects on campus who, they're going to be doing the drills, all the workouts, hoping to earn a scholarship offer. Then you have another tier of prospects who already have that scholarship offer, lots of scholarship offers, in fact, from all over the country. So they don't necessarily have to prove anything more. They just kind of sit back and relax and get to know the staff a little bit better, more on a personal level. So it's a little bit of a different approach, as far as this new staff goes, as far as camp goes. But I think it's making an impact. You talk to some of these top recruits after they leave, and they kind of appreciate being singled out, for lack of a better term, as one of those top prospects. They kind of just get a tour of campus, kind of check out how things are run, and they don't necessarily have to, put in the sweat and work to earn that scholarship offer because they already have it in their back pocket.
Right, and when Penn State came in, Ohio State did a little bit better recruiting into Pennsylvania. Michigan did a little bit better recruiting in Pennsylvania. So did Michigan State, as a matter of fact. Rutgers and Maryland are now in. Now, we know that Penn State has traditionally had success in Maryland, traditionally had success in New Jersey. Having Rutgers and Maryland in, does that actually, in the end, really help Penn State even more because of the Big Ten connection?
I mean, so far it appears that way. I mean, Franklin's got New Jersey on lockdown, and then, the DMV area, he's working his way toward locking that place down as well, too. So I don't know if it's necessarily a direct relation, though, as far as Rutgers joining the Big Ten, Maryland joining the Big Ten, as much as it is just James Franklin and some of these coaches have some real strong roots to the area. He spent a few years at Maryland, so he's got a real strong recruiting base down in that area. New Jersey, they just know him so well, and Penn State has such a good foothold there right now. So I'm not so sure if it's as much to do with them joining the Big Ten or if it's just prior connections that are helping them out. But, as they start to play each other, I think definitely that'll play more of a role. You're going to have New Jersey kids that, we'll see Penn State coming into Rutgers and any Big Ten team for that matter. They're going to start seeing schools like Wisconsin, Michigan State, Nebraska, schools a little farther away that maybe they wouldn't have seen play or seen in person beforehand, but now that they're in the Big Ten, they're going to be right there at Piscataway and, you know, playing right up the road. So I think it kind of will open up the recruiting territory for the entire conference, maybe not just for Penn State, because the success you're seeing right now in those two areas, you know, I think that's just from previous connection. They know a lot of people in these areas, and, you know, it's really paying off, and especially New Jersey. You know, you follow some of the Rutgers fans and some of the reaction to some of Penn State's recruiting success in New Jersey, and there's a lot of scared people over there that, you know, how are they going to be able to recruit the talent that they need in order to compete in this conference? So it kind of goes both ways there.
Tim, the players, James Franklin wants them to prefers to have them take both summer sessions, the 2 6-week sessions. Christian Hackenberg told me, for example, he took two classes in the first 6 week. This one that's just started, he's going to have one class. By having virtually all the players there for both sessions, which means they were there in the first session, which when the camps took place, how valuable was it to have the players on campus when the camps took place?
Oh, that was big. I mean, you had guys like Jordan Lucas, Malik Golden, Brandon Bell was working out the linebackers. These guys, they were at every single camp session, you know, working out. And I believe that's a new rule the NCAA passes for this year, that, you know, they're actually allowed to work out on camps now as coaches. I really think that helped out a lot. I talked about Miles Hartsfield earlier, the first commitment that Penn State got in June, the defensive back. He got a lot of time to work out with Jordan Lucas, you know, one-on-one during those camps. And, you know, that worked both ways. One, you have Jordan Lucas, who's going into his third year, has made some great strides since he got to Penn State and, you know, could be an all-Big Ten performer this coming season. So you've got a real good, you know, he's teaching good lessons, good technique, you know, Hartsfield. So that's one. And then two, you're also having that relationship starting to be built. You know, Hartsfield commits, and he's also already starting to get to know these players that are already on the team, you know, starting to become part of that family. You hear Franklin talk about so often. So kind of, you know, it's two separate, you know, factors there of having those players at camp. And talking to some of those players after camp, you know, they really enjoyed it too, you know. Some of these guys want to be coaches down the road, or maybe at least think they want to be coaches now. So this kind of gives them a little bit of a taste of what it's like, get their toes wet, to see what it's like to deal with these high school prospects. Because, you know, it might not seem like they've been out of high school long, but, you know, it changes quite a bit once you've been up in college for a few years and have to go back and work with the 15, 16, 17-year-old kids. So, yeah, I think they like it just as much as the recruits enjoy it, you know, being able to work out with an all Big Ten player, you know, be coached by, you know, Jordan Lucas, by, you know, I haven't seen Hackenberg there much yet this year, but, you know, say at the quarterbacks, right, Michael O'Connor, for example, he was helping out the quarterbacks at the last camp. So being able to, you know, help be coached by an Under Armour All-American like Michael O'Connor, you know, that really does, it resonates with the recruits on campus.
All right, Tim, thanks so much. Appreciate the time you gave us very, very much. Tim Owen from Blue White Illustrated. Appreciate the time he gave us. And, the recruiting end of it is obviously so far, I mean, it's interesting. James Franklin has, of course, now the reputation of being with Penn State fans. Wow, he's a great recruiter. And he is a great recruiter. There's no question about that. But it's just part of who he is. And I'm just so impressed with the total package after watching James Franklin coach this team during the course of the spring. See, I got a better read on him as Coach James Franklin and how he interacts. The question I asked in the second half hour with Sam Ficken about being a place kicker and about him, you know, with the water bottle, with the air horn, telling him, hey, look, everybody's going to run, they're all going to hate you and things like that. Okay, you know, you're like, okay, what's that deal about? That deal is about, look, okay, it's the end of the half, it's the end of the game, all right? What you've gone through in practice, all right, is going to be more difficult than the game because now you've proven over and over and over again with that kind of pressure that you can knock that thing through. That's the purpose, obviously, behind doing something like that. He and his staff, these guys can flat out coach. I can tell you that. You cannot believe the kind of good hands that Penn State football really is in. Our thanks to Tim Owen, Gino Lewis for being on this half hour. Next half hour, Mike Poorman. StateCollege.com will shift directions to the athletic director. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. And from the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kierwitz 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll take you to the news at the bottom of the hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car. Picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself. And negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word. Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served this valley and their customers for decades now. They've also given back to the Valley for decades. They are just ingrained in the community. And when it comes to your insurance needs, Purdy Insurance, they will take care of all of your insurance needs, and they'll do it, obviously, with your lifestyle in mind. Also, we are in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Care, Routes 11 to 15, and Hummel's Wharf on this Monday. This is a good day to, you know, in case you missed anything, to check out the podcast. Do that, okay, for Steve Jones Show, because opening half hour, to me, for a Penn State football fan, was must-listen radio with Dwight Gault, the strength and conditioning coach for Penn State. To me, that was a must-listen segment if you are a Penn State football fan, because he gives you great insight into the freshmen, insight into the progress of the football team. He says June is the toughest month that they go through at any time during the course of the year. Now, of course, he's getting ready for the training camp that's about to start. But Dwight Gault, to me, that is a must-listen-to segment in the opening half hour of the show today, and I think you'll find that to be a very revealing, I don't know, 12 to 15 minutes with him. In the second half hour, we heard from Christian Hackenberg and Mike Hull, Jesse James, Sam Ficken, Miles Diefenbach, and Adam Brennerman. Last half hour, we had Gino Lewis on the show, so we really have given you a wide range as Penn State gets ready for training camp. I saw James Franklin Saturday night. And just got the keys to his new house. He said, just picked up the keys today, Steve. I said, great. I was in terms of his new home. So he's set to go there. And he looks at me, he says, it's coming up. It's getting ready. It's close. It is, very much so. In fact, I have to have my Big Ten preseason ballot in by Wednesday, as a matter of fact. So I would think tonight I have to sit down and do a little research and maybe get that ballot in now. I just haven't had a chance to do it yet, but I'll get that ballot in for the preseason for all Big Ten. Now, obviously, a guy like Braxton Miller is going to make it, but you don't think I'm not going to vote for a guy like Christian Hackenberg, do you? Of course I will. Oh, that's right. I'm not supposed to reveal such things to be a voter. I understand that. All right. The athletic director search continues for Penn State. We know that Dr. Dave Joyner, officially steps aside on August 1st. He has also said that he will stay on as long as need be. So, I mean, August 1st is not a hard and fast date if this search continued on. Now, it probably, you know, they have candidates. A lot of candidates want this job. There's no question about that. Now it's a question of just picking the one that they think is the best fit for Penn State. But Mike Poorman of StateCollege.com did a lot of research on this. And what he decided to focus on were the other athletic directors in the Big Ten. What are their backgrounds? How deep were their resumes when they took the job? And I asked Mike straightforward. I mean, Mike, when it comes to the athletic director's search and other Big Ten athletic directors, what were the common themes and common denominators that you found among them?
Well, that's a good question. Most of them, more than I thought, were career college administrators. More than not, had advanced degrees. There are a number of lawyers, which I think we've seen that as an ongoing trend. And I think there's a line of demarcation. Half have been serving less than 6 years, and the other half 7 years or longer. So there's really a two-layer guard of people who are considered new and those who have been in the business for quite a long time. And I heard you guys yesterday, and Dave Brandon at Michigan, the Domino Pizza czar, certainly represents to a certain degree part of the new wave of ADs as far as having a business private industry background.
Yet there are a lot of twists and turns. I know we'll get John Bacon back on the show here pretty soon to talk about all this, but there have been a lot of twists and turns there, and he has not endeared himself to the student base at Michigan because there's still 6,000 student still 6,000 season tickets shy in the student section of selling, and they're not happy with him.
No, that's a good point. And you know, I both know John, and John's not really a fan of the current administration athletically there. So, you know, to a certain degree, you don't want to go too far afield from your from what your core product is. And the core product is alumni, students, college athletics. And while it may be very cool, they're bringing in, Real and Manchester U to play a soccer game at the Big House in August. It would be my opinion that it would behoove them to try to sell those extra 6,000 seats and reconnect with their students to come to the games as opposed to, you know, going into a new line of business.
Right. Fundraising is also a component in this. Do the athletic directors within the Big Ten have fundraising backgrounds before they took the job?
Yeah, not as many as you would think. There's one or two that have had their roots originally before sports even as far as development and raising funds. I think it's been part and parcel of their growth. Nine of the 13 came from really the traditional career path from going to university, being an assistant and an associate AD. What's interesting, though, and part and parcel of fundraising is very obviously, as you know, very sophisticated these days. It's not the old coach going out and glad-handing. And it's not even, you know, the AD sticking with the singular school raising funds for his alma mater. Only four of the 13 current ADs, not counting Dr. Joyner, came back to their alma mater to be AD. So it's a different type of more sophisticated fundraising that really they pick up that skill as they go along.
Were you able to get into contracts at all? I'll give you an example. That Gene Smith, who, by the way, has done an excellent job at Ohio State, all right? It was revealed that when Logan Stieber won the championship at 141 pounds in college wrestling, that Gene Smith got, a $17,000 bonus for this. Now, again, all credit to him and to his agent for getting this. But are those kind of performance bonuses standard for athletic directors?
Good question. A couple weeks, maybe a month or two ago, there was a piece on that, and he was the only AD within the conference that had a performance bonus tied to a singular performance. And I think because of that high-profile case, what's happening across the whole industry is they're not only removing themselves from an individual sport, but as far as national championships across all the board, they're staying with academic performance. And also, I see the Learfield Cup standings is also still a hallmark in which athletic directors nationally and obviously some in the Big Ten are still judged and receive additional bonuses for that.
All right, Learfield Cup, Director's Cup has been obviously important in terms of overall performance. Football, men's basketball, though, are the ones that are going to drive the economic engine. Have you looked at the patterns of hiring by athletic directors in the Big Ten, the new breed, and what they have done in terms of sticking with or bringing in someone else?
A lot of them bring in someone new as – you know, when you look at Minnesota, Teague came in and immediately he made within a year, a big splash hire of Patino. In Illinois, when I think it's Thomas, when he came in,
Yeah. He
made new hires in men's basketball, and I believe women's basketball, but also football. So they like to make that change if they can sooner rather than later. And part of the reason someone new comes in because there is a vulnerability in one area or the other.
Right.
Meaning basketball or football.
Right. The economist background, let's get in. Well, I talked about the fundraising part of it. What kind of background is it in terms, because you're talking about a Big Ten where Jim Delaney he can be an easy target when you're in his position. I'm telling you in no uncertain terms, this guy has done an unbelievable job in terms of his negotiating skills and how he's been able to get money to schools. The Big Ten could get up to $44.5 million per school based on some reports by 2017. So let's talk about the economics. What kind of backgrounds do these guys have in economics and handling large budgets of those scales?
Well, I'll give you a quick aside. Stan Wilcox, who Barron hired last year to be his AD, actually was an economics major and as an undergrad at Notre Dame. So that speaks directly to your point there. But I think an interesting hire recently in the Big Ten was Fred Glass at Indiana.
Yes.
He came from a law firm in Indianapolis where Jack Swarbrick, where 5 months earlier, they had Notre Dame had hired him as their AD, and the two of them had done a lot with Indianapolis as a city as far as bringing in the Final Four, amateur sports, across the board with those things. So that's an interesting, sports management on a broader scale, bringing in events, working with the NCAA, but also working in the private sector. So I think those are two hires that are maybe more of what's we're going to see continue to happen in the future as far as, as far as community, state, national-based sports management, sports promotion, but also having that legal aspect.
Mike Poorman, StateCollege.com, wrote an article on this as well as many others on a wide variety of things. Mike, after going through all of this, what do you think the profile of the new Penn State athletic director should include? And did your research change your opinion on what it should include?
Well, that's a great question. And what, back when it looked like Dr. Barron was going to be hired, I took a look at what he did at Florida State. His hire there, Stan Wilcox, who came from Duke, who came from Notre Dame, who was an associate commissioner at the Big East, who worked 8 years. He worked 6 years at the NCAA, has a law degree, has that background, was an athlete himself, very good at Notre Dame. He has the perfect background. And you can see now, you can see how and why Barron hired him for Florida State. Some of the situations that Florida State was in, as far as athletically, as far as some off the field things, as far as their capacity for their home games was at 91%. Penn State's is at 90%. Having a tie in, understanding how a league works, a conference works, but also having those solid years with the NCAA. if you take a look at Stan Wilcox's bio, his resume, you can see why he was hired at Florida State, and he would be a terrific fit at Penn State. I'm not sure Barron would bring him here a year after just hiring him at Florida State, but he would be the poster boy for Penn State's new hire.
Interesting. Very interesting. This hire, obviously, will be one. It's also a hire, too, where the Title IX component in conjunction with the O'Bannon case, in conjunction with the NLRB Northwestern case, does that come into play in terms of the legal background you're talking about?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, and a guy like Wilcox, a guy like, you know, Lewis, a guy like, you know, Eichhorst in Nebraska, who yeah. was a sports lawyer before he got in the college sports industry. Those things are huge now more than ever. And I think, I was surprised there were only three attorneys out of the 13 in the Big Ten. But more and more, for exactly what you're saying, Steve, you know, it's really a maze. And I think either the Penn State hire should or will have someone who has a background in law or a background having worked with or for the NCAA. Two critical components. If you get both, you know, in a lot of ways, in addition to bringing in that revenue side you're talking about, you know, that's a home run.
All right, so that is Mike Poorman, statecollege.com. Just some thoughts from him on the athletic department, the athletic director search at Penn State, which is going to be critical. Again, you're going to be the CEO of an entity that is $90 to $100 million. That's what it comes down to. Now, when people hear those numbers, that's when they start saying that, you know, you should be paying football and men's basketball players because of all the revenue, quote, that they generate. But the revenue they generate is not just for them. If the revenue that was generated by football and men's basketball just went to football and men's basketball, you could then easily sway me that the players should be getting a big cut of that. You could easily sway me. But because the money goes across the board to 31 sports here, 34 at Ohio State, only 14 at Texas, believe it or not. That's where you're going to lose me because you need the money for everything else. I mean, again, it's not being stowed away in a Grand Cayman's account under the name of Kay Herr. Yeah. So that's how, you know, if it was just, if all the money just went to football and men's basketball and there's just you're just recycling it, all that cash. Now you have a great argument for, I mean, look, they made all this money and they're not getting a penny of it and so forth. But what you're doing is you're taking it in the model today and you're putting it toward everybody else. And this is something I've talked about repeatedly. The free market works up to a point in sports. The free market works in negotiating television and radio contracts. The free market works in setting rates for corporate sponsors. The free market in sports does not work when it comes, to the competitive side of it. Even in the NFL, they have a salary cap. There's only so much money that Tom Brady and Peyton Manning can make. There's only so much money that LeBron James was allowed to make in Cleveland. If you're saying on the open market, the free market, LeBron James would be worth probably $100 to $150 million a year in terms of his value to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and not only that, his value to the league and the brand of the NBA worldwide. But there are rules, and the rules state he can get $42.1 million over 2 years. Okay, so it's free up to a point. The running partner in Cleveland, Johnny Manziel. Free market? Yeah, he elected to come out after 3 years at Texas A&M and enter the NFL draft. Oh, and by the way, which team did he select in the free market? Oh, that's right. He didn't select the team in the free market. They selected him. He was assigned to Cleveland, where he's already signed his contract. Okay, well, it's Johnny Manziel. I mean, they have great, marketing and so forth surrounding him. So he must have signed, what's his value? 30 to 50 million. No, they have a rookie salary cap as well. So you can see the free market only exists up to a certain point. I mean, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews just signed with the Chicago Blackhawks, 2 8-year contracts. But again, there's only so much money that the Blackhawks can spend under the collective bargaining agreement, and Toews and Kane maxed out on that. So and it wasn't a case where they, you know, their contract's done and they can just sell themselves to the highest bidder. The highest bidder has only so far they can go. Now, baseball is a little different than everybody else because baseball does not have a cap. It really is to the highest bidder. And you can see, for example, Albert Pujols, 10 years, $225 million. You're not going to see a 10-year, $225 million contract in the NBA, the NHL, or in the NFL. They have negotiated caps. Baseball doesn't have a negotiated cap. And thus you see the contracts that you have. And now look at your own team around here, the Philadelphia Phillies. How those contracts with no caps have the Phillies now in an absolute bind. There's nobody that really wants Ryan Howard's contract. They may want his bat. He'd be perfect in the American League right now. But with no salary cap, they negotiated contracts that were very large. Nobody really wants Cliff Lee's contract. Nobody really wants Ryan Howard's contract. Nobody else really wants Cole Hamels' contract. Those are big issues. Those are big issues. When the Red Sox turned themselves around, they were stuck with the same kind of contracts and got lucky, exponentially lucky, because they made a mistake in signing Carl Crawford for 7 years, $140 million. They made a mistake by signing Adrian Gonzalez, 7 years, $140 million. They made a mistake with Josh Beckett in terms of, I think his deal was 5 years, and he was up in the $90 million range. The Red Sox then made a trade with the Dodgers, who are awash in cash. And the Dodgers accepted that, and the Red Sox literally cleared $250 million off their payroll by trading four players and suddenly had the freedom to change up and do everything else. That's how they signed Shane Victorino. That's how they signed Mike Napoli. That's how they signed Johnny Gomes. I mean, that's how they put together last year's team, and they decided not to match the contract for Jacoby Ellsbury, who took a seven-year, $140 million deal with the Yankees. Okay? So there's a sport with no cap and the free market. Well, the free market can tie your hands as well. Today's show has been brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com from the Sunbury Motors Studio. I'm Steve Jones. Thanks for joining us on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.